Good morning, everyone. I trust you're all well. Happy Daylight Savings Day. I know that it's hard in the spring Daylight Savings because
we have to move the clock 1 hour ahead.
And that 1 hour difference actually does make a difference, doesn't it? It's hard to get up one extra hour. I woke up this morning and it was still dark outside. And unfortunately, at least it means that the sun will be out later, right? So it's good to see all of you and glad that you made it. And I know that, actually, when I look at some of your faces, you look a little sleepy. But hang in there. Because today, we're kicking off our Lenten series of sermons. And today, it seems like the lectionary texts give us a chance to sort of recap all that we've been studying up to this point, or looking at and reading and praying through. So, before I say anything more, I hope that we are all praying for the Malaysian airline situation and continue to pray for all the circumstances around the world in which things are looking difficult, and just the Ukraine situation as well. So please continue to keep the world's circumstances in your prayers. But before we continue, I just wanted to give some props to two things. We will announce it later, but this Friday, the youth are having a rally, so I'm going to be there. So I hope that all of you youth can go as well and join other churches and have a great time that night. Invite your friends. And then on March 30th is Everglow Sunday. So those are two things that our youth, I hope, will really, really pray for, and the rest of us who are here will support our youth. And then, of course, next week, you might have seen in the newsletters and updated that we are going to move downstairs after service. So please stay after service a little bit and help bring one or two chairs down with you tomorrow. And we'll say more about the move in a minute, but during the announcement time. But just pray for those and prepare yourself. It's going to be quite exciting. Let me begin by giving us sort of a recap of our Epiphany messages. As you have heard, our sermons during Epiphany centered around, I think, maybe one of two themes. The first theme is that the way we, as Christians, make a difference in our world, in our community, in people's lives, is to be a gathered community that lifts up Jesus Christ, that proclaims good news, and most importantly, lives out the Christian faith as a gathered community. So that's the first theme. We are salt and light to this world by being a community, by coming together to worship, to praise God, to serve Him. All right, so we have a VBS coming up, and there's a lot of VBS promotions going on. So one way that we can become this gathered community is to all pitch in to help the things that we do at the church, like VBS, to reach out to our community. The second way, based on a summary of our Epiphany sermons, is to be a community that follows and obeys and listens to, adheres to, Jesus' teachings, especially as found in the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 5 through 7. These three chapters are actually 5, 6, 7, yeah, 3. These three chapters are very, really, really central to Christian teaching about how we are to live our faith out. And let me just recap by summarizing what these are about. Now, the hard thing about reading these three chapters, you have the Beatitudes, you have all these different commands and teachings, Jesus teaching this and that. The most difficult thing, and when I read it for the first time, it was hard because it felt like these were a bunch of random commandments. Jesus said, do this, turn your left cheek if someone strikes you on the right cheek, give up your cloak. So they seem to be random laws and after a while, it just seems like, well, why is Jesus talking about all these different types of behaviors? But it's not. The Sermon on the Mount is not a set of random sayings or rules. In it, Jesus is focusing all of us, his disciples, on loving the neighbor, reaching out to those who are different from us, loving the enemy, being generous to those who mistreat us. So we didn't study Matthew 6 or 7, but there Jesus taught his disciples to practice righteousness, to give to the needy, to pray, and to fast, and do all those things quietly, not to show off. Right? And then he teaches them that the ultimate prayer, which we know as the Lord's Prayer, is about God's will being done on this earth, rather than not only in heaven, but on this earth. and we are asked to forgive others. Well, actually, in the prayer, we ask God to forgive us to the same degree that we forgive others. So think about that. If we don't forgive other people, then we don't have the right to ask God's forgiveness to that same degree. So there's this, everything is about relationship with someone else, with people in this world. Okay? And then he concludes by talking about investing in God's kingdom rather than earthly treasures. For where your treasure is, your heart will be there. And then he also encourages, the bottom line in chapter 7, verse 12, is that the golden rule, The golden rule is about loving others, doing unto others as we would have others do unto us. Does that make sense? Okay. It's about reaching out and caring for them. So in that sense, Matthew 5-7, the Sermon on the Mount, is a missional text. It's not about just focusing everything inwardly on our little community of people who care about ourselves. It's about reaching out. It's about reaching our neighbor. All right, so how do we become a confluence, an influential people of God? Well, this is the essential teaching of Jesus Christ, to learn how to reach out, to be generous, to love others, to treat others with dignity and respect, to care for others, to be compassionate, and not just be sucked into the temptation of just thinking about my own group of people, my own clique, and my own needs. Does that make sense? Okay, so read the Sermon on the Mount to yourself again, and you see that that's the central theme that goes through the whole thing. In fact, verse 12, the golden rule, does sum it up. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So in sum, the Christian community influences the world by showing everyone what it looks like when we love our neighbor and when we live by this golden rule. So the more we demonstrate this, the more we're able to show the world that Jesus and God and salvation is real. But you know something? When I read this for the first time, it cuts against the grain of everything that seems to be real for me. It does. Right? Because I'm not comfortable with being overly generous to other people. I'm not always willing to let someone who slaps me on the right cheek to slap me on the left cheek. I'm not willing to give my cloak up to someone who takes, you know, it's almost impossible, right? All the things that Jesus demands, right? How can I not look at a woman with lust, right? I mean, those are things that are almost impossible. In fact, they are impossible, really, aren't they? So the thing is that as I'm thinking about all the things that Jesus wants me to do in the Sermon on the Mount, I'm actually thinking about me. Can I actually do this? It's the me story that's in my mind, right? Whenever I'm thinking about, can I do these things that Jesus requires of me? Because the reality for me is this, that I'm concerned about my education. I gotta do well. I have to study well and complete my responsibilities there, right? And that's the reality I gotta deal with. If I just give up everything just to and neglect my education, what will happen? I can't just give up everything and do what Jesus asked me to do. My career. I mean, how can I live if I don't have money to feed myself and my family, right? And my status and my security. I mean, if I don't do the things I do to take care of myself, and then instead I have to do what Jesus asked me to do, is always thinking about other people, I can't do it. It doesn't work, right? It's hard. And the reason for this is because, and this is, I hope that you would admit this, because I'm admitting it right in front of you. I live most of my life dominated by the me story. It's about me. Is that true for you too? I don't spend most of my time thinking about other people. But that's precisely what Jesus wants me to do. So there's this difficulty here that is hard to reconcile. So whenever you and I face this type of tension and we look at what Jesus teaches and we see this radical discipleship is so unrealistic, this is the time when we need to go back into the basics and recap. So let's take a look. Essentially what I'm saying is that Jesus is teaching us that all of this me story is about misplaced devotion. We're putting our idols in the wrong places. But I'll get back to that later. So let's recap and look at Romans chapter 5. Now, the first 11 verses were not part of our lectionary reading, but I just want to summarize quickly because Romans chapter 5 is the key pivotal turning point in Paul's letter to the Romans. If without chapter 5, everything else doesn't work, right? Because up to chapter 5, Paul is presenting a case that everyone is in need of God. We're all sinners, whether or not we're Jewish with our law or we're not. We are all sinners. We stand under God's judgment. Okay? And because of that, we don't have any hope until chapter 5. Because in chapter 5, we discover that in Christ there's hope. And this stuff sounds very basic, but in case it's not, this is, let me summarize the first 11 verses because they're pretty important, but not for what I'm trying to drive at today, okay? We're justified through faith, not by keeping the law. So that's the first point he says. It's not by our own efforts. It's not by trying to obey the Ten Commandments and the Old Testament laws that allows us to be justified. And justified means that God has declared that we're okay, that we're not sinners anymore, that we can be saved. We can have the assurance that everything that he promised to the people of Israel and all his promises in the new creation are ours. In other words, we're saved. Okay. Secondly, so it's by faith, not by our effort to keep the law, is by our willingness to say to the Lord Jesus, I need your help. I can't do this on my own. I need you to save me. Okay, that's what it means to have faith. Secondly, we have peace with God through Jesus. All right, because of that, the tension that we have between us and God's will is reconciled. So now God and us are on the same page. It's almost like, you know, brothers who are fighting who finally make up the difference and become one again. And that's basically what justification, reconciliation is all about. And because of that, we can stand in God's grace. We can stand in the assurance that it's not about our performance, about how well we do and how ethical we are and how many good things we do. We are standing in the fact that God has already given to us the assurance that we're okay, that God has saved us, that God's blessed us, we're saved. So everything we do doesn't come out of trying to perform, trying to get the highest grade, trying to prove ourselves. It's all about God has already loved us, he's blessed us, he's given us all these things, and all we have to do is just respond in love. And finally, it's because all this works is because of Jesus' death. If he didn't die, we wouldn't be reconciled with God. Okay, so this is the first 11 verses. Romans is a beautiful, beautiful book. It's hard sometimes to understand, but I hope that some of us will take some time out to study it. But I don't want to, so I'm glossing over the first 11 verses because I want to get to the verse that Henry read for us, the passages that Henry read for us. And in order to understand this, all right, let's go back to that. Remember the first point. Jesus asks us to do all these things, right, in the Sermon on the Mount. And we're saying, oh man, I can't do because I'm thinking only about myself. So how do we overcome this me story? How do we escape this selfishness that we naturally have? Well, before we do that, I think it might be helpful to have a discussion among each other. So if you can find two or three persons, you know, and this will be very short. I'd like for you to do this. Ask yourself this question. Or share with each other. Is there something that you wish you could do over again? The answer should be yes, right? I think none of us live perfectly and say, I have no regrets at all. So turn to two or three people and sort of just share briefly. It doesn't have to be really personal, intimate, but just something that you did that you wish you could do over again. And I'll give you a couple of minutes to do that. Go ahead. Turn to your neighbors and just...
Thank you.
Okay, one more minute. Yeah, wouldn't it be great? wouldn't it be great if we had a redo button? We just push the button and we can just do it over again. Yeah, so for some of us, I think there are many things that if we could do it over again, we would feel much better about ourselves, right? Like, for example, during the Lunar New Year season, I wish I didn't eat so much. If I could do it over again, I wouldn't have gained so much weight. Or another one that Betty and I, well, not so much Betty, but myself, when we were younger, Betty and I, we did a lot of things. We had a lot of fun as a young couple before the kids came. I wish we had taken more pictures of ourselves. You know, we didn't have selfies back then. So, and it costed money. You actually had to process it, send it out, and this chemical treatment, blah, blah, blah. So it costed more money to print photos back then. But I really wish that I had more photos of myself. Because right now, as I looked at my collection, I don't see too many. I only have less than a handful of photos of me and Betty when we were younger. And I wish I had them because I could say, oh, look, Betty and I looked like this. It was really cool. You know, the thing that gets me is like all these younger couples who get married, when they get married, they take these glamour shots and they're saying, oh man, that is so cool. I can't do it now. I'm the grandfather now in the pictures, right? So let that be a lesson. If you want to, I mean, it's easier for you guys now. I think photoshopping might help, but it's hard. It won't be the same. So we do regret, wish we had the do-over button. We can take more pictures. But anyway, just keep that in mind, because when we look at this passage in Romans chapter 5, verse 12 to 19, that's somewhat what's going on here. That's similar to what's happening here. We're talking, because in Romans chapter 5, verse 12 to 19, Paul is presenting a tale of two stories. Okay, does that make sense? Two stories. One is a tragedy, and one is triumph. And let me just go through this quickly, because there's a lot I want to cover on this. So the first one is the tragedy of Adam. The story of a man who just could not get away from the me story. He and his wife just could not stop thinking about themselves. So when the snake tempted them with knowledge and all this wonderful stuff, they just get caved in. So the tragedy of Adam is the tragedy of sin that leads to both spiritual and physical death. All right, and you can see in verses 12 and 13, I don't want to reread the passage, but the basic thrust there is that sin came into the world through one man and death through sin. Okay. And even if one was Jewish and was given the law, it doesn't matter whether you have the law or not, all have sinned. Okay? And the idea here is that all of us humans kind of share Adam's sin. Because Adam made the mistake of making his own story come first before God. And in the process, all of us who share his genes or share he's become a pattern. His life story has become the pattern for us. And we do the same thing. Even if there was no genetic tie between us and Adam, we still do the same thing because we're locked into Adam's story. Okay? Does that make sense? So for example, how can we become less selfish? Well, the problem is we start off selfish, and that self-centeredness comes from Adam. It comes from the fact that we share this story with Adam. And the reason why it seems to make most sense, the reason why being selfish is plausible, is because it seems to be the reality of how everything works. Self-interest is the way that our world operates, right? So when we are influenced by that, it's very, very hard to break free from that story. So everything I do, every decision I make is often centered, but starts with what's in it for me first. And that is the core essence of Adam's tragedy. That he could not see that God created him for a bigger purpose. Why did God create Adam and Eve? To tend to God's creation, to make God's creation a new his world, God's world, the kind of world that he envisions for all of us. And it can go really deep. I don't want to spend too much time on that, just to keep that in mind. So the tragedy is that Adam's sin brought condemnation not and death, not just for himself, but for all of us who are his descendants. And again, it doesn't have to be biological or genetic. It's just think about the natural pattern of the way we think. So what do you do about that? That's one story. That's a tragedy. And let me just carry this further, because I think there's even more that we can think about. Last Sunday, Betty and I went to see an opera, Madame Butterfly. Have any of you heard of Madame Butterfly, the opera? Yeah. Have you, any of you seen it? Have you seen it without translation? Okay. We thank goodness San Jose Opera had the stage had a translation. Otherwise, it would have been horrible because you know they're singing in Italian. This is Puccini, right? And I don't understand what's going on, right? So they put the translation there. It was really good. They had this instead of subtitles, they put it on top of the stage. And as they were singing, as the actors were singing, you can see them, the dialogue there. And Madame Butterfly is actually a pretty cool story. Okay, there's on so many different levels, gender, race, et cetera, et cetera. And so for those of you who don't know anything about this story, okay, let me just give you a quick summary, and there'll be some spoilers, so cover your ears if you don't. and also, just to let you know, I don't really watch opera, this was a new experience for me, but I like musicals. And I like musicals and pop culture because in it, there are stories, rich stories, tragedies, triumphs, joys, comedies that talk about our human condition. And by observing and by reflecting on them, I get a sense of what is our relationship to God and to each other. And that's why these are really fun. So Puccini's Madame Butterfly was a really fun story because it was it's quintessentially an American story, even though the Italian opera composer Puccini rendered it in Italian. Well, it's a story about, it starts off with an American officer named Benjamin Franklin Pinkerton, who bought property in Japan in the mid-1850s, just when Japan opened up to the West. And in the property that he bought, it included a geisha. Okay, now I think this is based on a true story, and the story was actually written here in San Jose. All right, so you can look at the history. But anyway, so this geisha, her name is Xiao Xiao San, right? And also known as Madame Butterfly. And she was once a member of a noble family, but lost everything when her family sort of collapsed, or whatever the situation might be. It might have been related to the change in Japanese history at that time. So Pinkerton promises to love her, and they have a child through their love. And she believes him and renounces her family. She renounces her Shinto religion and becomes a Christian. And it sounds, this is the first two acts, it's wonderful. Oh, this love, 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 love. And, you know, I'm sitting there, like, okay, oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, sure, okay, the love, 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 okay. You know, I'm 51, you know, and I'm a little bit past the romance, you know, so I went through that. It was okay, it was fun, it was just okay. But, no, I'm not saying that, you should see the opera. Okay? It's beautiful. The music is beautiful. The vocals are wonderful. It's just wonderful. And so she ends, act two ends with her waiting for her Pinkerton to come back. Because she's there waiting for her man to come back to so they can restore their love and da, da, da. Because Pinkerton had to go back to the United States, and he's a lieutenant in the army and in the navy. So he came back. So she was waiting for him. And waiting and waiting. And then when he came back in Act 3, she discovers that he's already married. Okay? And his wife comes with him. And everything from that point on falls apart. Okay? And I'm not going to say any more, but you know how tragedies end, right? So in the end, what we see happening here is that she had misplaced her devotion to the wrong person. And in the same way, when we focus on the me story, we are misplacing our devotion to God and placing it on Adam's story. We think too much like Adam thinks. So the good news is this, that despite this reality, God has something to say about it. And the way God changes things is to tell the story again in a different way. It's to rewrite the story, or to show the different ending. Instead of a tragic ending of death, this story is told again. Instead, the ending is triumph and joy and salvation. The word for this is recapitulation. I know those of us who are in biology, we that's a theory that biologists use to demonstrate evolutionary theory. But this put that recapitulation idea aside, and think about this in its original sense. What does it mean to recapitulate? Doesn't it mean to just you have one idea and you say it again in a different way? That is one of the reasons why it's so important that Jesus was a man. He had to come and become the second Adam. He had to tell the story a second time. Does that make sense now? So this is the story of triumph rather than tragedy. So when we talk about Jesus dying and as a substitute for us, it's not just the death that substitutes, it's also he substituted for Adam's story. He took Adam's story and said, I'm going to live that, I'm going to be a human again, I'm going to be that second Adam, but this time I'm going to get it right. Does that make sense? So that is what the heart of the gospel is, especially here in Romans chapter 5. Jesus came to live Adam's life again, but in the end, instead of leading to sin and death, it leads to life and salvation. Does that make sense? So let me just see. We can look at some of the passages and get a better sense. This is like a do-over, right? For just as through the disobedience of one man, the many were made sinners. This is verse 19. Through the obedience of the one man, the many will be made righteous. Through the act of Jesus Christ, reliving Adam's life. And then it goes on in verse 19. Let's jump to verse 20. Okay, just making sure I have that set. The law was brought in so that the trespass might increase, but where sin increased, grace increased all the more. So that just as sin reigned in death, so also grace might reign through righteousness to bring eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. So Jesus had to become a human, to become that second Adam, to show us a second story, a different story, the story of triumph and over sin and death, and triumph over the me story. Okay? So in that sense, it'd be kind of like rewriting the script for Madame Butterfly. Can you imagine what it'd be like if you could take Madame Butterfly's story and rewrite it? And there have been some rewrites. David Henry Hwang wrote a play called M. Butterfly, which looks at that story from a different kind of perspective. I'm not going to get into that now, but it has more to do with a post-colonial orientalist gaze of the lieutenant. But we can talk about that later. That has relevance for us, but not directly. But we can also rewrite the story as a feminist story, which Disney has done, right? Right. Basically, instead of Madame Butterfly just committing suicide, she could become the feminist who says, "Who cares about you, Pinkerton? I'm going to go and triumph over this. I'm going to become the winner. You suck." You know, it could be like that, right? And I'm sure we could rewrite the script so that Madame Butterfly comes out to be more of a heroine, a self-empowered heroine, which is good. That's cool too. But all I'm saying is that this is what God is doing, right, to that me story. He, through, by coming again in the form of a human, he is rewriting our stories for us. So we have another story to latch onto. We don't have to be imprisoned by the me story. We can then move on and maybe develop the not me story, the story of Jesus Christ. And then, now I'll close this time by just sharing about a couple of stories. And this Wednesday, I don't know if any of you saw the Facebook post I put up last week. InterVarsity Christian Fellowship sponsored a faith and vocation workshop seminar this Wednesday, and we met at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church. And in that seminar workshop, we had there are two individuals who were sharing about their stories. One is Dennis Ortega, and the other one is Jimmy Lin. And in this story, they talked about in this panel, they shared about the kinds of things that they had to go through, the decisions they had to make, so that they could be more clear about God's calling, about where God wanted them to be. So let me just quickly share their stories so that we can get a sense of how these individuals have latched on to the Jesus story and tried to make their lives conform to it. Because all of these two guys could have followed the me story, but they didn't. Okay. So Dennis Ortega is currently the executive director of Lincoln Heights Tutorial Program in Los Angeles. It's an after-school education, college preparatory, and leadership development program that serves every year over 1,000 inner-city children and youth in Los Angeles. And he's married to a Vietnamese woman, and in his community there's tension between Hispanics and Vietnamese. And his story is one in which he had so many possibilities for himself. He actually was offered to do a doctorate at UCSF in the area of medical research. And he was an engineer. He had all kinds of high training. And he was special. He could have gotten into the industry and done very well for himself. But he turned these down because he felt called by God to serve the poor, to move into Los Angeles and help his own people, especially the Latinos who were there, who needed help, and to provide a place of reconciliation between Latinos and other people. And that is why, after all these years, as he tells his story, he still had to deal with his parents who disapproved of his choice. I remember him saying that, you know, he got accepted to this PhD program in UCSF, and he turned it down, and his parents were crazy. They were going nuts. And he turned it down to do this ministry. And so he's one story of a person who, instead of following the path that everyone else seems to follow, he felt that God wanted him to devote his life for others. That's just one story. This is more typical. There are other stories too. And the other person I want to share about is Jimmy Lin. Jimmy Lin is pretty prominent compared to Dennis. He's actually, people know more about him. He was a 2012 TED Fellow, and he's the founder and president of Rare Genomics Institute. This is the world's first, according to the self-description, the world's first platform to enable any community to leverage cutting-edge biotechnology to advance understanding of any rare disease. And in this situation, he was born, and there was this glamour shot that I'm so jealous of. He was born in a family of physicians. Okay, so all his grandparents, his father, his parents, they were all doctors. So they expected him to be a doctor too. So he went to medical school. He didn't go to medical school. So instead of becoming a doctor, he chose to go into biotech. And even then, instead of just getting into industry, he decided that he wanted to. And this is all because of his faith. He wanted to devote his gifts and his skills to helping people who are suffering from very rare genetic diseases. Because those who suffer from rare genetic diseases often have no place to get treatment. The marketplace doesn't really cater to people who don't have access to the new technology. Because the new technology is usually directed toward market-based solutions. So people do new technology because they hope to get the payoff later on. But what about the very few people who have rare genetic diseases? They don't get this support. So he decided to give all his energy and time and his intellectual capital to starting an organization that caters to people who suffer from rare genetic disorders. He's not making a lot of money, but he feels like he's following God's calling. Because instead of thinking first about himself, instead of being locked into the me story, he understands that because of Jesus Christ, he has another story. And he can live out the Sermon on the Mount. He doesn't have to be locked into the me story. So these are just two stories. And this is one of the reasons why I really urge all of us to get out there and hear the stories of people who are trying to make a difference. And don't stay locked up in your home. Because if we stay at home all the time or just stay with our work environment, all we hear are messages about me, the me story. We need to get out there and meet Christians, especially Christians, who are trying to live out Jesus Christ in a different way. And only then can we learn that there are models for us so that we don't have to be locked into the me story. I want to conclude by just sharing with you one last story. And this is the story of a storyteller. On April 4th, you know he's coming. JC is coming. Jason Chu. I've been announcing it. I devoted a whole update to him. The reason why is because I want you all to come, not just youth and young adults. I really, really feel like it's important to hear his story. Jason Chu is the person who is devoting his life to using his creative ability as a musician to tell the story of Jesus Christ in new and fresh, in ways that especially young people culture can really relate to. And I hope you can come to the concert, but I also want you to know that this is not just a time for entertainment. It's a time to look at another person who's trying to model this new story. And instead of just talking more about him, Brian, could you just play the clip? So in this video clip, I'm not sure about why we couldn't boost the volume up, but Jason tells a story of a girl who struggles with the old story, but found salvation and hope in the new story. Brothers and sisters, I think you know what I'm going to do now. I'm going to ask you, which story are you living with? If it's recapitulation, then you're following Jesus Christ, and that's awesome, that's great. I hope that you make that a real choice. The alternative is capitulation. And that, I hope, you don't do. Let's pray. God, we are so grateful for your salvation, because if you had not come and walked our walk and become the second Adam and then die in our place to give us life, if you had not come, we would only have one story, and a tragic one at that. But because of your grace, you are inviting us to be part of something different in you. So may this time be a moment as we sing the reflection song. May this be a time for us to think about which story we have in our minds and in our hearts. Which story do we want to have? The story of capitulation or the story of recapitulation? Just be with us now as we sing.